There is room in this northern dominion, under one flag and one set of laws, for one great people. There is no possibility for that greatness, under that same flag and those same laws, if we succumb to 100 squabbling particularities. Those words were said in 1865 by Thomas D'Arcy McGee. Words of courage are rare, sadly, on our political landscape. But when Michael Chong resigned as Veteran Affairs Minister, saying that I believe in one nation, undivided, called Canada, my first loyalty is to my country. It is for this fundamental principle that I cannot support recognizing a Quebec nation. He went further. He gave us a civics lesson, talking about the dangers of ethnic nationalism versus civic nationalism, which is what we should support and what we should propagate and what we should celebrate. This country was not built on the imperial ambitions of the French or the English. The best of this country occurred when we as a people, over the past century, went abroad and participated in all of mankind's transcendent yearning for a dent of change and welcomed immigrants from all corners of the world equally, not with parity, with equality, where there was no question of sang et langue, blood and language. That's just dead wrong. And the best of French-Canadian history said it's wrong. When Louis-Joseph Papineau fought the first fight for more power for Quebec and Quebecers and French-Canadians, it was to bring Quebec into the American Union because he felt it celebrated the broadest democratic principles. When Louis-Hippolyte Lafontaine started responsible government, it was with Robert Baldwin of Upper Canada to overcome ethnic particularities. When Sir George Etienne Cartier joined with Sir John A. Macdonald to form this country, it was at first to have a strong central government, and they were fighting Sir Joseph Howe of Nova Scotia, who because of money and Nova Scotia's wealth, wanted power split. When Wilfrid Laurier was prime minister at the beginning of the century and said Canada answers to a higher destiny, he also said that it was the pride of his life to have been excommunicated by Roman priests and denounced by Protestant parsons. The finest parts of our nature came out when we celebrated our universal commonalities. The sad thing of this vote that will take place tonight is that I believe this prime minister could have sold even Quebecers on the same moral high ground he has managed to put Canada on in the world stage. And it's sadness more than anger that moves us tonight. And with me to discuss this and the ramifications of this on all communities who are not de souche in Quebec or one of the founding cultures is one of the sharpest political observers in this country, Angela Persichelli, columnist for the Hill Times. Angela, you have warned time and time again in column after column on issue after issue about how easy it is for Canadians to go down the slippery slope of ethnic stereotyping. What do you think this is going to do? Not just for the future of the country, but for the future of many people within the country, not just in Quebec, but elsewhere. And what kind of a hook is this for people to hang all kinds of les autres, it's the other guy's fault, to lay the blame somewhere else?
I remember when I was in Italy and the politicians were not able to solve political problems. They were not able to change some set realities. What they decided, they were changing the grammar. They invented new words. They invented parallel convergence. Now,
I like that, the parallel convergence.
Convergence. When they were trying to invent, they reformed the grammar to reform the meaning of the words, but the reality was always the same. And I believe that being a nation within a nation, I believe part of the same situation I was experiencing in Italy, and that was the worst part of the political life that I had to go through in Italy. And unfortunately, I thought that that was over when I came over to Canada, where clarity was the key word on ever political debate.
Or at least candor.
That's right. So we have this a nation within a nation. We have a part saying that means a lot, another saying means nothing. But what is the reality? What is the reality? What is it going to do to people like you and me when we go tomorrow and buy milk? I believe that if Michael Ignatieff, because this is all his fault.
Completely.
Yes. What Michael Ignatieff has done with the complicity of most of the media that has moved the debate from real issues that are really affecting the life of every Canadian, wherever they live, and we are going to talk about to as an issue that it's going that we want to rewrite history. We would like to change the past, and we don't understand that whatever we write on papers on those bases has nothing to do with the future of any country, any culture, of anything. And if anything, and I go back to what you were saying before, Beryl, they are going to divide on the base of a cultural differences, of a cultural origin. And this is what, unfortunately, Canada is going. And when I see events, and we were talking before what I was reading on the Montreal Gazette.
Angela, could I ask you to hold that thought? We have to take a short break, but nobody could have put it more eloquently than you just put it, and we'll come down to the specifics right after this. And we're talking about the effects on this country of the vote that's taking place tonight that will give recognition, yes, we know, to the Québécois, not to Quebec. We know it's not going to reopen the constitutional debate, but words matter. They're like bullets. They create images. This country strove to be the best that the world had to offer because we came from everywhere to celebrate our common universalities, not our ethnic particularities. Nobody was better than anybody else. The two founding cultures, other than the Aboriginal, the third founding culture, came here as imperialists. That was understood. And Canadian history was moving toward a point to overcome that. And the past 20 to 30 years, the debate on Quebec sovereignty, Quebec rights, basically started by a bunch of federal bureaucrats that couldn't find power for themselves in Ottawa, like Jacques Parizeau and Claude Morin, has ballooned into, as our guest Angela Persichelli has said, a change of language. But I'll go further. It's ballooned into the big lie. And as Stalin once said, the broad mass of the people will believe the big lie if it's repeated often enough. And Angela, that's happening now. And if that's happening, what's to stop if Quebec is saying sang et langue, blood and language? Well, what's to stop in Alberta from saying, well, we're individualistic, Quebec is collectivist, we have our own culture here, we have our own distinct society?
What about natives?
What about natives, exactly? They're already recognized, the Cree as a nation, and others.
Well, they...
But you know what? My concern is this. My concern is that if everything can be cut up, if everything can be particularized, if everybody other than the two founding European cultures and the Aboriginals, all these three are untouchable, then all the rest of us are touchable. You know, and what it brings to mind the RCMP and the Montreal police raids on underworld figures last week. The almost gleeful use of the word Italian mafia. And then you read the names, and fully a third weren't Italian.
It was disgusting reading things on the Montreal Gazette, the deafening silence of the Italians on the matter, of the Italians. And, you know, the most interesting part is that why, and this is the question I was asking to some RCMP people, because they made the same mistake, and they were glad to make the mistake, in my opinion. And I was asking the nationality of their boss, the commissioner of the RCMP, Giuliano Zaccardelli.
Right.
So it looks like that the Canadian government appointed an Italian, because this is the coincidence. Mr. Zaccardelli arrived from Italy in 1954. He became a Canadian citizen. He kept, of course, his last name, Italian last name. You can change that. It's exactly as Mr. Vito Rizzuto. He came in Canada in 1954, became a Canadian citizen, and he kept his Italian last name. So why Mr. Rizzuto is Italian and Mr. Zaccardelli is Canadian? You know, those inconsistency, those things that...
Do you know what I'm afraid of, Angela? I'm afraid that Mr. Zaccardelli, in many people's minds, is not Canadian.
Well,
I'm afraid that there is not so much a glass ceiling for many of us.
That's exactly
But maybe it's a brick ceiling for many of us. Angelo, would you indulge me? Our lines are lit up. I don't know what you did, but you just lit up Montreal. You mind if we just ease some pressure off our operator and take a call?
You're the boss.
Roy from Verdun.
Hi there, Beryl. You really do bring up a pretty interesting story about how Harper might be dividing Canada. I would like to point.
Well, I don't think he means to. I think he, as Angelo Priscilli was online with us, it was a brilliant political move. My feeling was that Stephen Harper was the first leader in 30 years that could have sold the same broad, high ground moral vision in Quebec and succeeded just as well, just as he has set a new bold vision for us in the world abroad.
May I add some icing to the cake on that?
Sure.
On September 12th, 13th, and 14th, this year, in Banff, Alberta, Donald Rumsfeld, Condoleezza Rice, Stockwell Day, and Stephen Harper, they signed another paper to harmonize Mexico, the USA, and Canada.
That's
by
correct.
2010.
Right.
They call it the North American Union.
And it's not getting a lot of... it's interesting you should bring it up, Roy, and I congratulate you for paying attention to it, because this is something that's being done at the executive level of all three countries.
Yes, and you would actually be the second media outlet in this country to put it on air.
It is being done with such what's the word I'm looking for? Angelo, help me out here.
It's not a conspiracy.
With sub rosa, it's not a conspiracy, but they're doing it at the executive level.
Yes.
Consultation with the legislative, and certainly not with the people.
It was headline news in Mexico, and it used to be on Mark Pettigrew's website as well. Now, this North American Union, Mel Hertig talks about it.
Roy, can you stay with us for a second?
Yes,
I'm being
sir.
Motioned to wildly to take a short break. Angelo
yes,
Persichelli, please stand by. We'll be right back. And we're discussing the national question. It'll come to be coming to a vote in a few minutes. We're fortunate to have Angelo Persichelli with me from Toronto, the Hill Times political correspondent. I know, Angelo, you're going to have to go in a few minutes to watch the vote. Roy from Verdun. Roy, you've been making the point that because of this new North American Union agreement that the President of Mexico, the President of the United States, and the Prime Minister of Canada, and this thing started last year already.
Actually, it started a few years earlier. This was their 30th meeting.
I'm trying to move it along because our lines are really lit, and Angelo's got to go watch the vote. Are you suggesting that because of what of that, that basically this is just a giveaway?
Mark Twain would call it obfuscation. Harper gave the keynote speech that he would harmonize our military, police, history, education, and medical by 2010 with Mexico and the USA, that we would in fact become one North American Union, one country. And as you say, this is being done at the high executive level. And only one newspaper in Canada, some small place in Alberta, gave it a full-page story. It's also being pushed by Mel Hertig as well. If you Google North American Union, it comes up several million times. If you Google the Banff meeting, it comes up about four times. But Donald Rumsfeld was in Banff in September 12th.
Roy, I don't want to cut you short, but our lines are really blazing, and I thank you for bringing this up. Angelo, there's an implication what Roy has said, that this is almost like a giveaway, like, okay, it doesn't really matter. Let's just keep on the big train of North American Union. But I think the immediate ramifications are going to be more biting than that, won't they?
Well,
they'll be meaner. They'll be smaller. They'll make of us a mean-spirited people.
The first ramification, I believe, Beryl, is that we waste a lot of time talking
horrible.
About... Yes, and we should be debating other things. This one came up only because a desperate candidate for the Liberal leadership, Michael Ignatieff, he was trying hard to have an inroad into Quebec. And we have now the whole nation talking about the consequences of that desperate act. And I believe that we have a responsibility in the media, too, that, we know, and you know my opinion about national media in
yes.
Canada. And unfortunately, we are forced to talk about something that I believe that doesn't deserve a lot of attention.
As Pierre, there are no Pierre Trudeaus who said it at the hearings on Charlottetown in 1992, I believe it was, this deserves a big fat no. And nobody's saying it that straight at the political level.
Absolutely.
Sadly.
Unfortunately, he thought he had a solution, but he didn't have any solution. What he tried to do, he tried to bring the Quebec problem within Canada to dilute it and to have the problem basically resolved in a big, you know, a small quantity of oil, you put it in a big... A bigger recipient, and then everything is going to disappear. The fact of the matter is that instead of Canadizing the problem in Quebec, he basically went the other way around. He, quote-unquote, infected Canada with that, because now we start listening to other provinces talking like Quebec. So that's also a legacy from Pierre Trudeau, that instead of solving the problem, bringing it to Canada, make it disappear, it just basically was a contagious with many other provinces.
Angelo Persichelli, thanks very much. I know you've got to go watch the vote, and I look forward to having you in studio on Thursday night.
It's my pleasure.
Take care, Angelo.
Bye.
Francis from Montreal North, welcome.
Hi, Beryl. How are you?
Okay, yourself.
Mind-boggled. I don't understand how this is even an issue anymore. I mean, look, I'm 21 years old. I was born and raised here. I went to a French high school, not by being forced by my parents, but by choice. I chose to go to a French high school. I'm Anglophone. I'm a proud Montrealer. I'm a proud Quebecer. And I'm a proud Canadian. I don't see why we should even be discussing this. Why would we even think of separating the country, even if it's not, you know, with physical limitations, you're still separated by ethnicity. I mean,
because
look,
I hate to say it, and I've quoted this over and over again, and I hate quoting Stalin, but the broad mass of the people will believe a big lie if it's repeated often enough. Because 30 years ago, Francis, you had a bunch of politicians who wanted power, and they used the big lie that some great injustice was done to a native people, the French Canadians, by the English, leaving out, and there's been such a sanitization of the history books, Francis, that you can't even barely find as the reason why the French came to Quebec as imperialists, and the English came here as imperialists. You know, the only people who came here in peace are the immigrants. Maybe they should make Italian the national language.
Yeah, but, well, you know what? I'm half Italian, okay? And you know what? I'm not Italian. I wasn't born in Italy. I'm Canadian. I'm Italian-Canadian. I have Italian heritage in me. But you know what? I'm Canadian at heart. I'm Quebecer at heart. I mean, I've lived here all my life, and I am proud to say I can speak both languages quite fluently. You know, I have no problem getting along with any of my French friends. I mean, it makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
Absolutely none at all. Francis, I thank you for your call, and I thank you for your time, and do not lose hope. Courage will overcome everything. We'll be right back after this. And you can email your comments to us at info@iapm.ca. And boy, if I'm the last angry man as president of the Institute of Public Affairs, I tell you, there's a lot of angry people out there. The lines haven't been this lit up. I can't remember such a reaction since the Dawson College shootings to anything. People are angry out there, and they don't want to take it anymore. And there's a friend of mine named Laura at Trinity College in Dublin, and she's supposed to be listening. If she's listening, this is like the Easter uprising. So before we get to our next guest, we got to clear some lines or... I think Nick Mays is going to have a little bit of a breakdown there in Master Control. Carlo in Laval,
yes.
Welcome.
Thank you. Hi.
Hi.
Sorry, I have trouble to hear sometimes with the radio. I want to say my opinion. And look, I moved here in Canada just 6 years ago because I was born and raised in Italy.
Right.
And one thing that I'm very surprised sometimes, it's very hard to understand politics, but it's not so hard to understand the history of Quebec. And I wonder how come still they're talking about separation after the big price that the history had to teach them.
Carlo, I'll tell you why, and the answer comes from your own history in Italy. And I'll say it in Italian. And I'll say it in English, and I'll repeat it in English, because we have not acted boldly. When the Prince of Savoy, 100 years ago, asked Giuseppe Mazzini what he should do about the treachery in his court, Mazzini wrote back one sentence answer. Si voi non fate altre faranno e contro voi senza voi. If you don't act, others will, and against you, and without you. And that has been the problem of this country. Who speaks for Canada? Trudeau asked so many decades ago, and we have not acted. And we have, because we have not acted, our political agenda has been hijacked, and people like you and people like me and people like Angela Persichelli are always going to be les autres. Carlo, thank you very much. We've got to keep this rolling. Someone who knows what this means very well, this descent into tribalism, is our next guest. Charles Malab is president of El Kataib of Canada, which is the Canadian organization support that has a relationship with the political party that assassinated industry minister, Lebanese industry minister Pierre Jamayel belonged to. And if anyone knows how a society can descend into tribalism, and I'm not suggesting direct parallels between Canada and Lebanon, but we have been through periods of violence in 1970 in this country when we failed to unite behind common universalities. And sadly, Lebanon, what was called the Paris of the Middle East, the city of Beirut, is undergoing that now. Charles Malab, welcome. Thank you for taking the time to be with us.
Thank you, Mr. Mays.
This has been a very emotional weekend for you. I know you had a large mass at Saint-Antoine-le-Grand for Pierre Jamayel this weekend.
Yes, but let me say good evening to all listeners, and let me correct my name. It's Shawki Abu Malhab. First of all, I would like to offer my condolences to the free world, because really, as Canadian, if we can't protect the democracy and the freedom in Lebanon, and the proof it's the assassination of a young man, 34 years old, let me say he was really high ranker in the Lebanese government as a minister and as a deputy, but he's still young as a flower.
And he was a voice of moderation. He was certainly
that's
not...
That's it. That's his only crime, because he was really facing people by saying the truth and preaching democracy and freedom. It's only his mistake. There's no other mistakes he did.
Do you find it sad that Lebanon... politically, Lebanon had and I don't know how many listeners know this, but Lebanon created a status quo 60 years ago by saying we're not even going to have a census. We're going to assume a certain percentage of the country is Christian and Sunni Muslim and Druze, and we're going to rotate the presidency and the prime ministership, excuse me, and the chief of defense staff. And that status quo was broken decades ago during the Civil War, rebuilt?
No, it's not true. It's not true. It's a lot of factors that made the Lebanese fight. And our war in Lebanon, a lot of people, they think it's a civil war. It's not a civil war. It's not at all civil war. It's a war against a lot of players in Lebanon, and you can name many: Syrian, Iranian, maybe the American. I don't know. There's a lot of players in Lebanon, so it's not a fight between religion or a civil or whatever. Because right now, Lebanon is divided in two, if we can say it, two divisions. There's a lot of Christian; they don't share the same opinion as other Christian. And there's a lot of Muslims, they don't share the same opinion as other Muslims. So it's not a question of religion or factions or whatever you want to name it. I would like to be clear. Lebanon, it's a small country, and unfortunately, it's the only country they have real democracy and real
pluralism in the Arab Middle East.
That's it. And this is maybe what makes it unique and different than other Arab countries.
If you could just stand by, we'll be right back with you after this break.
Okay, sir.
And we're continuing our conversation with Israel Maab, who's president of the El Kataib, the Canadian organization affiliated with assassinated Lebanese Industry Minister Pierre Jamayel's party. We're talking about the sad descent of Lebanon into tribalism and violence. And you were making the point before the break that the violence was not a civil war between Lebanese of whatever religion, but from outside factors. But when we talked, when I said tribalism, in 1970, when we had when the Palestinians came in, and a little short while later, President Frangieh allowed them to arm themselves in the beginning of the first civil war.
No, it's not President Frangieh. Let me correct you one more time.
Go ahead.
It's the Cairo 1969. And the whole Arab country who forced Lebanon to sign such an agreement. So, as I said, Mr. Mays, it's always Lebanon. Lebanon, it's a weak link in the Middle East. We have to admit it. It's a 10,452 kilometers. What I'm talking, if Canadians are listening to me, from Montreal to Quebec, that's the length of Lebanon.
That's right.
And 50 kilometers. So, when it's surrounded by a stronger country and bigger country than this small and beautiful country, it's like a heaven on earth. So a lot of Arab decision makers, or maybe Israel, or maybe the state, or whatever you can name, any country, Iran, they can play a major role in Lebanon.
Can anybody stop Iranian influence with Hezbollah threatening blackmail on the government?
I think it's impossible, because Hezbollah, it's they go by religion. So the religion is guiding Hezbollah. So it's the influence. It's very, very, very tight with Iran. So it's impossible to break it.
You're not sounding very pessimistic, but we wish you and we wish Lebanon the best, and Lebanon for the Lebanese. Finally, inshallah.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Before we get to our next guest, Brian from Lachine, you've been very patient.
Yes, I listened to you about this whole issue of Quebec having power in Canada. And sometimes I think...
Well, I think Quebec has a lot of power in Canada. We're talking about the recognition of ethnicity.
Yeah, but if you want to make a functioning Quebec in Canada, is it true or not true that the rest of the country should be more bilingual? But in fact, the reverse has happened to some institutions in Quebec, that they have lost the bilingual aspect. You know, I mean, the fact is that...
Well, bilingualism has grown in the rest of Canada, but bilingualism has not grown at the government level in Quebec.
Yeah.
Government powers have been diffused to Quebec, including immigration, yet, you know, no other demands like that have been made by any other part of the country. And the more and more is given... To the blackmail.
I know, I understand.
The more is demanded, they'll never be an end to it.
I'm saying
Brian, do you know, I'm going to tell you something that I don't think too many listeners remember. People of a certain age will remember. In 1954, there was a provincial election. Maurice Duplessis for the Union Nationale, Georges Lapalme for the Liberals. The election was run on one issue, income tax. Duplessis wanted a Quebec income tax. It was going to be a flat 15%, against which he would credit Ottawa. Well, we know, of course, that it's now 15%. Most of our taxes go to Quebec. And we know that Quebec has not given one credit against the transfer of payments. Some economists think, on this whole transfer of payments issues, there is a minority opinion out there that says Quebec owes Ottawa, not Ottawa owing Quebec.
Maybe so, but when you continue with this argument about bilingualism, Heritage Canada apparently allocated enormous monies to Quebec, and there was a resulting scandal. Now, what happened in the meantime was that certain English groups in Quebec lost their funding, like Alliance Quebec.
Yep.
And Alliance Quebec, for no fault of its own, was infiltrated by criminal elements, and we won't discuss those criminal elements, because obviously you're aware of the fact that there were some criminals involved in that whole Heritage scandal. I mean, you can't deny that it wasn't a small scandal, because it was tied once again to multiculturalism and to some extent, the fact that recognizing Quebec's unique cultural background. So I'm saying...
Oh, you know, it wasn't criminals. And frankly, as I said to a speech to Alliance Quebec, there's a role for Alliance Quebec to play, but frankly, they shouldn't depend on government money. If people believe in something, this is the problem with government as it's developed in Quebec over 30 years, a whole series of entitlements, rights without responsibilities. If you... Look, my institute publishes a magazine. We were offered money from the government. I said, no way, because you have to report it. If you're on the battleground of ideas, then go out, raise money, raise resources by yourself, and the Canada and Quebecers should stop sucking off the tit of government all the time.
Maybe so, but what happened to the Anglophone minorities in Quebec?
Let them raise their resolve and let them start to fight. Brian, I'm sorry, but the lines are really heating up.
Okay.
I thank you for your call. David Harris, former chief of strategic planning for CSIS. Welcome, and thank you for being patient, but the lines have not stopped.
Thanks, Beryl.
David, we've been talking tonight about the national question. We went into the Lebanese question, and to me, there's a sad tie of tribalism. And with you and I have discussed before in this program, if we're going to build a national political will, if we're going to build a national consensus where we don't have to worry about homegrown terrorists like the alleged Toronto 17, where we have to start celebrating what it means to be a member of a free pluralistic society and not descend into tribalism. And I didn't mean to draw an exact comparison with Lebanon, but if you leave the door open to anybody being as equal as the next guy, not to equality, but to parity, as George Jonas wrote, then you get these situations, as we were discussing earlier, you and I were discussing, where you have Ryerson University now, we had McGill, we had U of M, calls by Muslims, calls by every religious group for their own prayer rooms. When does it stop and we build a Chinese wall between state and faith?
Yeah. One of the concerns, obviously, is that we're a pretty spoiled people. In the memory of most of us, we don't have that experience of the violent kind of tribalism and divisiveness that has been such a hideous ruination of so many countries and situations. And I guess many of us must seem to feel that we're somehow guaranteed that it'll never be any less than it is today in Canada. The problem is that that has seemed to allow us to get a bit loose about ensuring the genuine equality of people. And that includes defending ourselves from supremacist efforts.
David, I beg your indulgence one more moment because we've got to take a short break, but I want to address the point you just made about Canadian expectations, and I want to bring up something that Edward Lutzak told me this weekend. We'll be right back with David Harris. And those of you on the line, you got to email me with your comments at info@iapm.ca when this is over. We're talking to David Harris, president of Insignis Research, former chief strategic planning for CSIS. David, you mentioned before the break that Canadians are so comfortable. They're so much in a bubble. And this weekend I was talking with Edward Lutzak, of course, the international security analyst that
right.
You know well.
Oh, yeah.
He was in Montreal, and he said, Canada and Canadians are going to wake up when they get a shot like the European countries did. And he was specifically talking about Spain. So I said, well, we know about the Madrid bombings, but Edward, you know, Zapatero, the Spanish prime minister, got out of the Middle East, got out of the coalition, is doing this Alliance of Civilizations nonsense. And Lutzak said to me, yeah, that's what he's doing publicly. Privately, behind the scenes, he is working very closely with the Americans, with the Brits, even with the Israelis. They are scared and they are nervous. Do we need a massive wake-up call like that, like we got with the FLQ in 1970, to shake us out of our lethargy?
Oh, there are all kinds of difficulties involved in this. It may not be enough to have people privately doing the right thing, because we've really got to educate the public so they understand what's going on. And being hit violently might or might not be able to salvage our situation if it alerts us. The problem, however, is that there are real risks and issues of infiltration into all manner of Canadian society. I mean, we were talking earlier about this issue that would appear to be almost unrelated and innocent of Islamic groups, specific Islamic groups insisting on prayer rooms and other forms of treatment that might not be being offered to other religious
mm-hmm.
groups. And one of the things that's disturbing is that in some of these situations, especially in universities, we're seeing organizations at the vanguard of these movements that seem to be Wahhabist-oriented. So that's the Saudi brand, a very severe brand of Islam, and in many ways it's muscling out some of the far more moderate and reasonable and accommodating Islamic groups, and most certainly it's muscling out to any non-Islamic groups.
Yeah, David, you and I have also talked on other occasions about another problem, and it relates to the tribalism as a security problem. At the time of the arrest of the alleged terrorist at Toronto 17, we learned that for a year, CSIS and RCMP agents had gone to these kids' families, these young people's families, had told them that they were under surveillance, had told them the kind of connections they had. They tried to work within the community,
mm-hmm.
and nothing helped. Now, if we descend in this country into everybody's right to be wrong kind of mentality. If we don't offer up a genuine national mythology of what it means to be pluralistic and free as a people, if we pander to groups, both domestic old stock and newcomers, how is it possible to keep any kind of security regimen? Because do you not need the people to do some self-policing at the same time that you have a security apparatus?
Well, we've got to be conditioned for a kind of humility across the board. In other words, I guess those who've been exposed to what had been our educational system over the years have got the message that we should be proud of what we are, but we're no better than our neighbors, whatever their description is. And I don't know that some people are fully getting that message. There seems to be some room for supremacism. Some may be more equal than others.
It is going to be an interesting time, particularly as this political season unfolds. David Harris, thanks very much for your time.
Thanks, Beryl.
Montreal, everybody listening on the World Wide Web, it is an important night, and it's important because of one word, freedom. It is not that long ago that President Kennedy stood in front of the Berlin Wall in 1963, 5 months, almost to the day before his assassination, and said, freedom is indivisible. So is a nation, if it means to give all of its citizens that hope for their future, that hope to maximize the consequence of their individuality and the promise of the supremacy of their suffrage. If that promise, if that check comes back NSF, then we will become a people of low limitation and narrow circumstance. And that has not been the legacy of this country in the past 100 years. My thanks to Nick Mays and Master Control. We'll be back with you tomorrow night.